AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Hi, my name is Joe, and I'm the host of Tales, Trails, and Taverns. In this show, Rob and I like to take an active approach by hiking out to haunted, creepy, and abandoned places. We love the adventure and discovering the dark history of the locations we visit. We release a new episode every Friday on Apple, Spotify, and Patreon, as well as bonus episodes on varying Tuesdays. But don't just take my word for it, we have great listeners who have left some awesome reviews.
Oh, I love adventure, but during those times when I can't get to the Outback, I like to listen to Tales, Trails, and Taverns. Those boys dig deep into the dark history, and their first-hand experiences really delivers the excitement. This podcast is a beaut.
Back when I was the governor, I didn't have time to listen to podcasts. But now that I'm retired from politics, I can focus on my two passions, pumping iron and listening to Tales, Trails, and Taverns.
It doesn't matter who we are. What matters is that we all listen to Tales, Trails, and Taverns.
I love listening to the podcast. Wait, what's a podcast again?
It's an audio show you listen to.
Oh, like on the radio?
Sort of, yeah.
Okay. I love listening to Tulips and Tiddlywinks.
It's Tales, Trails, and Taverns.
And what do you do again?
Hike to scary places and drink beer.
Sounds terrifying. Okay. I like to listen to Terrifying Tea Time, but not on the radio.
Okay, thank you. You did great.
You're welcome. Say, you're kind of cute. Is there a Mrs. Tales, Trails, and Taverns?
Now you get it?
No actual celebrities or political figures have endorsed Tales, Trails, and Taverns. All the reviews you've heard were written, poorly, by the host, George Lennox, as well as the impersonations of celebrities, politicians, and movie characters. I meant no harm. Please don't sue me.
I'm Mandy.
And I'm Avery.
We're the hosts and creators of Thick Thighs and Creepy Vibes.
Join us as we take a deep dive into the macabre and the unexplained.
Listen every Wednesday as we take you on a chilling journey that transports you to all corners of the Great White North.
Let's boot those Sunday scaries while we take a rip into the harrowing tales of the haunted and the supernatural phenomena that defy explanation.
So grab your ketchup chips
and your Caesars and make sure to
creep it real.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us for Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy. Declan, yeah, always. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Always good to hang out with you guys. Thanks for checking us out once again for another interesting podcast. Hopefully you guys enjoy this time.
For sure. What are you going to be telling us about today, Declan?
I am going to be talking about some weird neurological disorders.
Oh, that's yes. Usually the stuff that I do. And you're like, stop it. It's grossing me out. I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah, but this one is like things that I don't want. Like, saying this sounds rude, but I feel like a lot of these things are made up for attention, but oh, I do believe that okay. They're real. So like, okay. This is not a common opinion, but Tourette's. I feel like Tourette's is a very common I know people with Tourette's, and there's like varying level of Tourette's, but I feel like a lot of the things you see online about it are just people wanting attention.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, but these are things that I've never heard of, and so I feel like people, they're not commonly be like, oh, I have, I don't want to give anything this away, but
okay,
yeah, but what story do you have for us today?
I am going to be telling you about a woman who has been in love a lot of times, and they haven't always gone very well, those relationships.
Strange.
Her name is Sarah Hartsfield, and Well, that's her most recent name. We'll just say that. We'll get into it. And the drink that I brought to go along with this story is called the Black Widow. So that might give a little heads up as to why Sarah's relationships haven't always gone as planned. The cocktail is using blackberry juice. So you're supposed to make blackberry juice. And for the blackberry juice, it says half a tablespoon of lemon juice, half a cup of blackberries. And basically, you're supposed to combine the blackberries and the lemon juice in a blender and then fine strain that to make juice. Now, I will say this about it. I did as directed and got nowhere near 4 ounces of blackberry juice for this cocktail. So you might want to use more blackberries.
It's also not blackberry season right now.
I used frozen blackberries, but I thawed them out. I let them get completely room temperature. Usually that gives you more juice then.
Yeah, usually.
It should have been. I did the half cup, and I'm pretty sure I got about a quarter of an ounce. So I dumped a whole bunch of blackberries in the blender, and I still ended up with only 3 ounces. So the measurements that I'm going to give are the measurements per the website that I got it from.
I bought a $10 bottle of organic blackberry juice.
You probably could do that too. But for the drink, you're going to use 1 ounce of simple syrup, 4 ounces of your blackberry juice, and 2 ounces of vodka. You're going to mix all of that together in a cocktail glass with ice. Stir it nice and well so that it's all mixed up, and then enjoy. And you can garnish with blackberries if you would like to. I will also say my blackberry juice, because I used a blender and it wasn't a juicer, is thick. It is thick. Like, it's blackberry puree. It is not juice. So bear that in mind. You might get a different outcome if you were to just use blackberry juice, either from a juicer or a bottle. I don't know. But my drink is shit thick, girl.
Mine's,
but I think it's going to be tasty.
Consistency, but yeah, I think so too. Let's give it a try.
Are you ready? All it tastes is blackberry, and it's delicious.
It is delicious.
It's just pureed blackberries. Pretty damn tasty.
Yes, I can get behind this cocktail.
For sure. For me, if you put blackberries on anything, I'm probably going to like it. So
true. Us Oregonians love our blackberries.
We do. We do love our blackberries. And such a short season to get them. Okay, are you ready for this love stories with plural gone wrong?
Yes.
As I mentioned, Sarah Hartsfield is the topic of my story today, but Hartsfield wasn't always her last name. She's been married and engaged a bunch of times. And so for the sake of clarity, I'm just going to call her Sarah because, well, there's been a lot of names, and it would be confusing to list them all, and I don't think it's necessary. So we're just going to go with the name Sarah, because that is her name. Yeah. She was born in 1976 in Otterville, Missouri. Sarah endured a troubled upbringing. She was put into foster care around age 12 after allegations of sexual abuse involving her biological father and her stepfather. Her stepfather also had a violent criminal record, including a murder conviction. previously. So needless to say, probably not the most welcoming of home environments. But she probably was put into foster care, and it didn't, you know, kind of normalized after that. One of her foster parents described Sarah as controlling and manipulative from an early age. Despite a stable foster family environment, Sarah's behavior remained difficult through adolescence. She attended Green Ridge High School, and by the late 1990s had already begun a pattern of volatile relationships. As I mentioned before, Sarah had a lot of significant relationships. I don't have a problem with people having a lot of relationships. That's fine and normal, I think. But when you marry every person you date, and then that marriage lasts like 2 years, maybe don't get married every time and just date. But she got married to everybody. Over the 1990s and early 2000s, she had three separate marriages, all ending within a few years. Some of the relationships were tumultuous and filled with allegations of infidelity and threats. Between her second and third marriages, Sarah joined the U.S. Army, where she served for some time as a motor transport operator and later as an intelligence analyst. She met her third husband while stationed in Alaska, but again, this marriage didn't last, and they divorced in 2011. Sarah served with the Army for 20 years and then retired in April 2017. Slightly prior to her retirement, while she was stationed in Texas, she met David Bragg, who was working temporarily in Texas. For a while, the two had a long-distance relationship, but she eventually moved to Minnesota to be with David. He would become her fourth fiancé. This relationship never made it to marriage, but ended much differently than her previous ones. All of those ones had ended in divorce, and this one, well, he probably would have preferred it ended in divorce. Family members of the couple noted that they always seemed to be arguing. In 2018, Sarah shot and killed David. Not
Jesus.
Really? Yes. She took it up a notch. She was like, let's not get married. Let's not get divorced. I'm just going to finish it here. Her defense was that he physically assaulted her and shot at her first. At the time, the county prosecutor declined to press charges against Sarah, ruling the situation as self-defense. David's family, though, denied ever seeing him be violent.
Suspicious.
Right. Rather suspicious. But the prosecutor was like, no, he was coming after her, and that was the only solution for her was to shoot him to get away. No charges were pressed against her, and they just ruled it self-defense and said, carry on. And I don't, because they didn't really investigate it, there's not a lot of information out there right now. However, we'll discuss it again in a few minutes.
Okay.
Shortly after David's death, Sarah got married for the fourth time. This marriage was also short-lived and only lasted a couple of years. Her fifth marriage was to Joseph Hartsfield in February 2022, and is the ultimate reason that I am telling you this story, because this is where it got real bad.
Real bad. Okay.
Joseph was born in Channelview, Texas in 1976. He enjoyed outdoor activities like fishing and hunting. He was described as fun-loving and the family clown. Yet another short marriage, this one lasted just under a year until his death in January 2023.
I see why. So it's this Black Widow cocktail.
Yes, exactly.
Sounds a lot like a certain spider.
A little bit, a little bit. Joseph was only 46 years old at the time of his death. He was diabetic and wore a continuous glucose monitor. On January 7th, 2023, Joseph's blood sugar dropped to life-threatening levels while he was at home. Sarah claimed that she tried to help by giving him juice and jam, but he didn't respond to those, so she called 911.
Was that blackberry jam?
It was not blackberry jam. Although, I mean, I guess it could be blackberry jam. I don't think the jam was specified. She just said, I tried to give him juice and jam to get him out of his hypoglycemic state. And
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
It didn't work, so she called 911.
Okay.
As you should do if you're with somebody who's having that problem. Joseph was admitted to the hospital in an unconscious state. Despite emergency treatment, his condition worsened and he died a few days later. An autopsy revealed the cause of death to be an insulin overdose. Multiple insulin pens were found at the scene, which was inconsistent with health protocols concerning treatment for diabetes. This raised some suspicion regarding a deliberate overdose. Essentially, they were thinking that she just shot him with a bunch of insulin and then waited for him to die, basically. God. If you have diabetes and you have insulin pens, you're insulin dependent, you don't keep shooting yourself with them if you're hypoglycemic, because that just makes it worse. You give your body sugar to counteract that, which is what she tried to do with the juice and jam, but whatever. Investigators asked Sarah about her actions prior to her 911 call. Initially, she claimed that she had been asleep, but her phone showed different information, including searches and phone records showing that she had been active on the phone for quite some time before calling 911. She's like doing Google searches and shopping and doing some other not great stuff. There was also evidence that Sarah had made herself Joseph's Apple legacy contact just before his hospitalization, which allowed her to access his phone after he'd been hospitalized, and she deleted a bunch of incriminating texts.
That's interesting.
Not a good thing to do. One of the most troubling pieces of evidence was that it appeared Sarah had delayed calling 911 by over an hour, despite Joseph's critical condition. During the time she delayed calling 911, she recorded a video of Joseph while he was obviously in a compromised health state. So he's just laying there semi-conscious and she's taking video like, oh, look how out of it he is, because I overdosed him on insulin.
That's evil.
She is 100% evil. Text and phone records showed Sarah discussing Joseph's status in suspicious terms, contradicting her in-person statements. So she's telling cops, oh, you know, I tried to help him. I did all these things. But yet her phone is showing that she didn't do jack shit for him, except wait for him to go unconscious, basically.
Jesus.
Several of her messages had been deleted, but not permanently removed. So law enforcement was able to get a hold of the stuff. Sarah, of course, denied involvement, arguing the death was accidental due to his medical issues and his own mismanagement of his health. So apparently he stabbed himself a bunch of times with his insulin pens. I don't know.
If you're trying to off yourself, that would be the worst way to do it, I feel. Like, if you have...
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like a quick death, I don't think. I think you have, serious health repercussions.
Right. I mean, he was unconscious, but still alive for days. in the hospital.
Oh God.
And he'd been struck the glucose monitor, I think it was like 12 or 24 hours, close to 24 hours that it was showing that he was hypoglycemic.
I don't want to compare any, this is just a joke, but I'm imagining like when you eat too much ice cream and then you can't move and you're just right. laying on the couch like, oh my God, I
you're
wish
into
I was
your
dead.
Own food
I'm
coma.
Gonna throw up. Like,
right. Yeah, I don't think he felt that way. I'm sure
he felt
much
a lot
worse. Yeah. Obviously, law enforcement didn't believe her story because it was changing repeatedly. She was arrested after about a month after his death for his murder. She pleaded not guilty, as you do, you know. The trial began in September 2025. So this is a recent resolved case.
Okay.
During the trial, family members testified to Joseph's fear and desire to leave the marriage. All the inconsistencies of Sarah's statements were brought to light. The jury convicted her of first-degree murder after deliberating for about an hour. Essentially, they were like, we don't buy your bullshit. You can go to prison. She was sentenced to life in prison with parole eligibility after 30 years. Of course, she has filed an appeal regarding the conviction. And that is, you know, sitting there waiting because this is just recently resolved. And so the appeal hasn't gone through any processing yet. In light of this case, Minnesota has started to look at David Bragg's shooting death again. But his case is not the only one that has come under scrutiny since Joseph's death. There have been allegations that Sarah tried to get her fourth husband involved in a murder plot against her third husband's new wife, which I feel like
that
I need.
Sentence might be
diagram.
The only, yeah, the sentence might be the only time it's ever been said in human history.
Right. Right. It's very confusing. There was also discussion of her possible involvement regarding an arson that took place at her family home when she was much younger. But regardless of all of the allegations and suspicions and rumors, she's only been convicted for Joseph's death at this time. That is my Black Widow story. If anybody deserves a Black Widow name, I think it's her. With
definitely.
Two deaths under her belt.
Yeah, that's super. I like names like that where they fit just perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Same. Yeah, it's a good one. Tell us this weird neurologic condition.
Okay. So I got a handful of them today.
Okay.
So the human brain is the most complex structure known to science. It is responsible for every thought, sensation, and action that defines who we are. Yet when the brain misfires or sustains damage, it can create conditions so bizarre and unsettling that they seem almost supernatural. Today, we'll explore five of the strangest neurological disorders that I could find. Conditions cool. that blur the line between body and mind, reality and illusion. So the first one that I found is called alien hand syndrome.
Oh.
So alien hand syndrome is one of the rarest and most fascinating neurological disorders ever recovered. Recorded, not recovered. It causes one hand, sometimes both, to act seemingly on its own, performing actions independent of the person's conscious will.
Yeah.
The disorder was formally described in 1908 by German neurologist
okay.
Kurt Goldstein. His patients had suffered a stroke that damaged the corpus callosum.
Callosum.
The thick band of nerve fibers connecting the brain's left and right hemispheres. After the stroke, she noticed something strange. Her left hand would reach out and grab objects without her permission. Sometimes even worked against her right hand. So,
oh my God, that would be so freaky.
It would be terrifying. I feel like something bad would happen. You reach out and grab the wrong thing. You know what I'm saying?
That sounds like a horror movie.
Unbuttoning a blouse she had just buttoned or snatching an item she had just set down. She referred to it as the other hand, as though it belonged to someone else entirely. The root cause of...
You would have to tie it to your body.
Yeah. I would just wear a sling.
Yeah,
it would limit so much. So the root cause of alien hand syndrome lies in a disconnect between regions in the brain responsible for voluntary movement and those that control consciousness. The motor cortex continues to send movement commands, but the prefrontal cortex, which normally oversees and approves those commands, has lost control.
Oh.
In effect, the hand's movements are initiated by the brain, but without the person's awareness or consent.
I hate it.
That's terrible.
I hate it.
Alien hand syndrome can occur after a stroke, brain tumor, aneurysm, surgery, especially surgeries that separate the brain's hemispheres to treat severe epilepsy. These brain split operations, popular in the 1960s and 1970s, often left patients with unexpected side effects. One woman described her left hand as rebellious, often acting in opposition to her right. When she would light a cigarette with her right hand, the left hand would snatch it away. Other patients, a rogue hand tries to choke him in his sleep.
No! No! Holy crap.
Despite how terrifying that sounds, the hand is not truly possessed. Instead, it's obeying motor commands generated in areas no longer connected to conscious brain decision making. Interestingly, people with alien hand syndrome typically recognize the hand as their own, but feel it has its own will. So it's not like this is someone else's hand. You're being possessed. It's like it's connected to my body, but it just does it what it wants.
Ugh, the worst. Yeah.
There is no known cure. However, treatments focused on managing symptoms, keeping the hand occupied by holding an object, wearing an oven mitt, or even just a mat. You have to wear a fucking oven mitt. And it's because one of the only oven mitts I have is a cat cooking like bread.
Hilarious. So
just having to wear that every single day at work and stuff. Like,
perfect.
Over time, the brain sometimes adapts and the frequency of involuntary movements decreases. Still, alien hand syndrome remains one of the clearest demonstrations of how consciousness is not as unified as we imagine. The next syndrome, disease, they're neurological diseases, but this is, so it's called Cotard's delusion or the walking corpse syndrome.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
Yeah. The syndrome is named after the French neurologist Jules Cotard, who first described in 1880. His patient, known as Mademoiselle X, believes she was cursed. She denied the existence of her own body, claiming she had no brain, no nerves, no chest, no stomach. Convinced she was dead, she also refused to eat, saying that there was no need to feed a corpse, eventually dying of starvation.
That's terrible.
Cotard's delusion is rare but very severe, often emerging alongside major depression, schizophrenia, or brain damage. Neuroimaging studies have shown abnormalities in the parietal. There you go. I should have just consulted you for all these parietal and frontal lobes.
I could tell you.
Regions associated with the body awareness and emotion. Essentially, the brain's eternal map of the body becomes disoriented, leading to complete breakdown in the sense of self. Modern cases have echoed Mademoiselle X's experience in 1996. A man named Graham suffered a massive depressive episode and attempted suicide by electrocution.
Oh, no.
After surviving, he became convinced he had destroyed his brain and died in the process. He told doctors he no longer needed to sleep or eat because he was already dead. Brain scans later revealed severely reduced activity in his frontal and parietal lobes, similar to the brain activity seen in people under anesthesia or deep coma. So,
weird.
He had really cooked his brain. I mean, he wasn't wrong about cooking his brain, but he wasn't dead.
Wow. That's trippy. Yeah.
Treatment usually involves a combination of antidepressants, antipsychotic medication, and in this guy's case, I hope not, but electroconvulsive therapy.
That seems counterintuitive.
I know. Well, two wrongs make a right. Maybe if you shock him enough again, he'll turn back normal.
What if you
sometimes
set
I think
up
about that
like,
with my jaw. Like if someone hits my jaw on the other side, will it reset it?
Maybe. I wonder like if you can switch it. Like if you determine like the right side of the body was positive and the left side was negative, and then you switch the charges like on a battery.
Well,
like the positive and negative charges of a battery.
I think I've covered one of those similar things in this.
Oh.
Where it's like one of the where like the right side can control the left side of your body and stuff like
that.
Yeah,
that's normal.
Pretty sure.
That's normal.
About that, but we'll see. So the next neurological disorder is, I'm gonna fuck this pronunciation up, Capgras delusion or imposter syndrome.
Oh,
Capgras
yeah.
delusion sounds like the plot of a science fiction movie, and in many ways it feels like one. People who suffer from this disorder become convinced that loved ones, friends, or even pets have been replaced by identical imposters. So this isn't the imposter syndrome that everyone's like
everyone
with a good job
they
is
have.
Like, I have imposter syndrome. I don't feel like
yeah,
I belong here.
Okay.
This is the feeling
everyone,
that everyone
around you
know. Yeah.
So you have been replaced by an imposter.
No, everyone else.
In my mind. In my mind, if I had this,
yes,
you,
if you
would
had
be
this,
an imposter.
I would be an imposter. Dad would be an imposter. Gina, all them.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, I could. So the condition was first described in 1923 by French psychiatrist Joseph Capgras. Capgras? Probably.
I don't know about that Capgras. One. Can't help you on that one.
Who treated a woman convinced her husband and children had been replaced by lookalikes. She claimed the doubles looked and acted exactly the same, but were not her real family. Capgras called it illusion de solis, the illusion of doubles. Unlike typical hallucinations, Capgras delusions didn't alter what people see. Instead, it affected how they feel about what they see. The person visually recognized a familiar face, and the brain's emotional response to that face is absent. So they were able to recognize their loved ones, but not know who they are and think that they're like, ugh.
That is terrible.
So Capgras delusion often arrives after brain injury, dementia, schizophrenia, or temporal lobe epilepsy. It may appear suddenly and vanish as mysteriously, but some cases are specific and last an entire person's life. life.
Oh my.
A patient might believe one's person is an imposter, while others may extend to pets, belongings, or even the entire environment. One remarkable case involved a man who believed his parents had been replaced by duplicates. However, when he spoke to them on the phone, he accepted them as genuine. This reinforced the theory that visual recognition, not auditory recognition, was disrupted in his brain. So when he talked to them in the phone, he was like, oh, that's my real parents. But when he saw them in person, he was like, they're sure. What's my middle name?
Interesting. I would.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would think it would be the opposite. I would fear someone that I was talking to somebody that wasn't
that's
real.
Just his case.
That was that guy. Yeah.
I'm sure he hit. From what I saw, it didn't explain like what kind of brain, because you also really can't know what kind of brain damage someone has unless you cut them open and look at their brain. Like that's the big thing with CTE is like a lot of these football players and stuff, they get hit in the head, and basically all we know about CTE is that if you get hit in the head, your chances are much higher of having it. So like it's a lot of these things are, you can't identify kind of what causes it. It's just it's like someone's fingerprint. It's like sometimes it can be different and
weird.
Super weird. So hepispatial neglect. So imagine looking at a mirror and shaving only half of your face, or eating a food from only half of your plate, unaware the other half exists. This is the reality for people living with hemispatial neglect, a neurological condition where one side of space, usually the left, simply disappears from awareness.
Why the left?
So hemispatial neglect is most often caused by a stroke or injury to the right, parietal lobe.
There you go.
I even took classes about anatomy and stuff, and I still can't.
Oh, anyway, yeah.
So this normally happens when someone has a stroke targeting the right parietal lobe, the area of the brain responsible for spatial attention. Interestingly, this is not a problem of vision. The eyes function normally. The issue lies in attention and perception. The brain fails to register or acknowledge stimuli on the neglected side. In one classic test, patients are asked to draw a clock from memory. The results are striking. They crowd all the numbers from 1 to 12 on the right side of the circle, leaving the left side blank.
Yep.
Another test asks them to bisect a line in the middle. They routinely mark the midpoint far to the right, ignoring the true center, which is super interesting to me. Like the clock thing is different because you can picture a circle, and if you can't see the left side of the circle, but if it's just a line and you mark.
But if you think about it, they're only seeing half of the line.
And
so they probably mark it like a quarter thing. To the right.
But it's not a vision thing. Which is weird. It's like a spatial awareness, which is super interesting because.
Yeah.
There's people that don't have a left eye that can look at a circle and draw a line through the middle of it. But like this is like a weird,
the
brain
weird.
Is so interesting.
I think there's different the clock thing to draw a clock.
Yeah.
I think there are different conditions that draw the clock differently, if I remember correctly.
Wasn't that one of our synesthesia things? Like,
no, it has to do with like dementia sometimes, and it's a test that they give to
old kind of Salvador Dali.
Yeah, it's a test that they commonly give to elderly patients in part of their testing, not only for like strokes and stuff, but also for dementia testing. And I think I can't remember for sure, and I might be butchering the information, but I think that I've heard or had learned some different information. Like if you draw a clock and the numbers are like this, it means this. And if it numbers are like this, and it could mean
like
this other
Rorschach
thing.
Like a Rorschach test almost?
No, it's pretty specific. Like you said, with this, they draw all 12 numbers on one side of the clock. I think that there are different brain conditions that they do different things with drawing the clock. I don't know. It's irrelevant. Never mind.
So in one particularly famous case, a woman with severe left side neglect was asked to describe a square in Milan she knew well. When asked to imagine standing on one side of the square, she described only the buildings on her right. When asked to picture herself standing on the opposite side, she described the buildings that had been on her left, now imagined on her right. So, when asked to stand in, like, if you're at like a park, let's say a park, and you're standing on one corner of the park looking down that side of the park, and it's like, picture everything in the park. And she only saw the stuff on the right side.
Stuff on the right.
Stand on the opposite side of the park. Then she only pictured the stuff that would be on the left side if she was standing there the first time. So she got the whole picture of the park, but she could only see it if she was standing on opposite corners looking opposite
ways.
Weird.
Weird.
Yeah.
Weird.
So hemispatial neglect is not a form of blindness. It's an absence of attention. Patients often deny there's anything wrong, a condition called anosognosia. Anosognosia? Sure. They bump into furniture, fail to dress one side of their butt. No, A-N-O-S-O-G-N-O-S-I-A. Anosognosia. That's not even close.
Okay, I'm going to look up the pronunciation. Anosognosia.
Anosognosia.
Oh, not even close.
Anosognosia.
Anosognosia. Okay.
Okay. They may bump into furniture, fail to dress one side of their body, or insist they've finished a meal when half the food remains untouched.
Wow.
That's the weird thing. If you're eating food and you just can't see the left part of the plate doesn't exist.
I bet those people lose weight really easily.
Yeah. Getting proper portion sizes.
Right.
So
could you imagine not dressing half of your body?
Well,
do you just have one pant leg on?
That's the thing. And that doesn't make any sense to me, because how they don't make half shirts.
Right.
They do. They're called crop tops, but not in that way.
Right. Not that direction. It's not right and left.
You're only allowed to wear
top and bottom
and jean shorts.
So, do you just, if you're putting pants on, do you just put one pant leg on and then forget to put your other pant leg on?
Yeah.
And so you're walking around going, why won't my pants stay up? Because it's only on one leg. It has to be all the way up and buttoned for your pants to stay on, or pulled up. So you're just walking around with half of your ass hanging out and a random, your pant leg just flapping in the breeze. It's like, why am I cold on half of my body that doesn't exist? Yeah.
So recovery can vary. Some regain awareness over weeks or months. Others never fully recover. Rehabilitation focuses on retaining the brain to attend to the neglected side, using eye exercises, visual cues, or even prism glasses that shift the virtual field. So, that would be super weird. Because, I've seen, I don't know if you've seen these, but they make glasses for people that want to lay down in bed and look at their phone. And it's like a prism that is a 90 degree. So it's kind of like a submarine where you put the glasses on and it like you lay on your back and then you can see 90 degrees forward at your phone that you. I wonder if that's
just lay on your side and put your phone propped up on something.
I don't know. I want to try them. I wouldn't buy them, but if someone sent me them, if someone wants to send me telescopic prism glasses,
yes,
feel free. But
let us know. Yeah, yeah, we'll give you an address to send.
Because I
to.
Feel like it'd be pretty nice, but
it'd be so weird. I don't think I would like it.
The final one I want to talk about is body integrity identity disorder.
Oh, that's
I'm gonna
a lot
try
of words.
And pronounce the medical term. Automonophilia?
Maybe.
So, among the most controversial and least understood neurological disorders is the body integrity identity disorder, often called automonopia or automonophilia, I think is what it's called.
Well, I'm gonna
People
look
with
it
this
up.
Condition feel a deep, persistent desire to amputate a healthy limb. Typically an arm or leg.
Oh, yes.
Because
I've
they feel it
this.
Does not belong to them.
Ugh.
Others feel only complete or at peace when imagining themselves without it. Reports of this phenomenon go back decades, though the term automonophilia, I'm just going to keep calling it that because I like the name automonopia, but automonophilia, meaning love of amputation, was coined in the 1970s by psychologist John Money. What a fucking sick name, John Money. Initially, it was thought to be a a weird sexual attraction to amputation. Later, it was discovered that most suffer from identity mismatch disorder, which is kind of like identity. Onomatophilia? Is that what he said?
No, here's how you pronounce it. Oh,
apodemnophilia.
Apodemnophilia. Apodemnophilia.
I don't think that's how it's fucking. Apodem. Yeah, I'm gonna keep calling it monophilia.
Okay.
So, some brain imaging studies have shed some light on its origin. The right superior parietal? What? God damn it.
No.
Parietal.
Parietal. Yes, you got
parietal.
It.
Parietal. The right parietal. Superior parietal it. Lobule. Lobe
or lobule?
L-O-B-U-L-E. Lobule?
Yes, lobule.
So, the right superior parietal lobule. God damn it. You know what I'm trying to fucking say. The area of the brain that constructs our internal map of the body shows abnormal activity in people with BIID. Essentially, the brain's body map fails to include the affected limb. As a result, the limb feels alien as though it does not belong to itself, which I tried to think about
like
what
one.
That would feel like. Yeah, but this when your body is like, hey, I need to cut it off because it doesn't belong to me. Alien, they know they belong, that
it
the limb belongs
to
them, but that it has its own control. This one is,
right,
this isn't my limb. It needs to go.
Ew.
And so I think about that. Have you ever woken up like you slept wrong and you're like, you slept,
yes,
on your arm and just your forearm isn't alive anymore.
Yep.
And it's like,
yep,
no matter what you do, it doesn't feel like it's your arm. I feel like,
yes,
that's kind of what they're experiencing, but like long term. Like that's the only thing I have,
yeah,
to compare it to. And that,
yeah,
would be terrifying. Because
it would be.
I've had
like
it last
it.
For like maybe 1 minute as the max. When you like wake up and you're like.
Right. And it probably isn't really a full minute. It's probably like 20 seconds. But when you're
feels like
just
a minute
waking
when you can't
up,
feel your arm.
It feels like forever. Yeah. Yeah, I get it.
So the parallels to the this experience of patients with parietal lobe damage who deny ownership of their limbs, phenomenon known as somatoparaphrenia. The brain is intact, but the internal representation of the body is incomplete from birth. So when you're born, it's just people with BIID often go to extreme lengths to align their physical bodies with their perceived identity.
Wait a second. If it was from birth, though, how would you know that it didn't feel like, would you're like, oh, my left lower leg feels
different. I think you'd find out. Like, it'd be like, hey, pick up your arm. And it'd be like, what arm?
I feel like
I don't know. When
you're born with something, that's just your normal, though. I could see if you had a brain injury.
But
you could be like, this doesn't feel the same anymore.
If you had two arms and you could only feel one of them, I feel like eventually yeah. through your life, people would be like,
true.
Either what's up with your arm or it,
right?
Like, can't think fast or something. Like, someone would say, think fast, and you get hit with a baseball. Like,
but do they not
and you
feel
realize
it?
You can't pick your arm up. That's the thing I don't know.
Or is it that it feels weird to them?
From what I've seen, they can't feel it at all. Like,
oh.
And it, from what they believe, so they can't feel it. And they think that since they can't feel it, it belongs to someone else, is kind of the basic understanding of what I get from what I read. But so some self attempt amputation, while others stimulate disability using wheelchairs or leg braces. In rare cases, surgeon in other countries have performed amputations on consenting adults after psychological evaluation.
Yeah, you'd need one.
I don't want to make any connections here, but it's hard not to. So these cases have sparked intense ethical debates. Critics argue that removing a healthy limb violates medical ethics, while advocates compare it to gender affirming surgery. A procedure that restores harmony.
We're not even
going to
go there.
That's the joke I was trying to make. But there's currently no standard treatment for BIID. Some researchers have explored therapy to address the distress associated with the condition, but most interventions failed to resolve the sense of incongruency. Neuroimaging and virtual reality therapies are being tested to help patients, which is interesting to me.
Yeah.
Virtual reality therapies, like where you look like you don't have your arm or leg or something. And
That
one is weird to me. It blends the line of things that we don't want to talk about on this. We don't like to get political, but it's blends the line of that. But I think
it does
for that. Like if you're looking at your right forearm and it's like, this isn't mine. Like, I agree with the doctors. You shouldn't cut off a healthy limb, but if you could VR therapy and stuff, like, I don't, that might be helpful, I guess.
I think there needs to be something, you know, to decide.
If you can afford it,
try and
go ahead, chop your fucking arm off. But
yeah, don't do it yourself, though. Don't do it yourself.
I mean, yeah, you probably shouldn't do it yourself. But I think that if you can afford it, if you want to, because people do all types of plastic surgery and stuff. If you want to chop your arm off and get it sewn shut and get a bionic arm and you can afford it, go for it.
But okay, that would be kind of cool.
For it.
Right.
Yeah. Mm. Do you have a chaser for us? I still don't.
I have a chaser. It is a watch recommendation for the mini series on Netflix, Monster, which is the Ed Gein story.
The Ed Gein one,
yes, and I resisted.
Is it as good as the It's like docudrama, right?
It's kind of, yeah, it's a docudrama.
Okay.
It's a lot of episodes.
They don't interview the dog walker's Grammy.
No, they're not interviewing anybody. It's the guy that plays Ed Gein is Charlie Hunnam, which that actor is normally a really hot looking dude. And when you realize that he's playing this not hot dude, it kind of fucks with your brain a little bit. We did Ed Gein.
A lot of chicks
we
like
covered
that,
him
though.
On episode 139. That, yeah.
So that might make him hotter to other people that need
it could.
Therapy.
I don't know. It's surprising to me that they could get somebody like Charlie Hunnam to play this guy in the story. It's so twisted and demented. Again, we talked about it in our episode 139. We talked about Ed Gein and we glossed over some of the really gross stuff, but they show some really gross stuff in that.
Do they like show the, I don't know how to say this without ruining the story. Like, do they show that?
You mean the skin and stuff and the body parts that were? Yes.
Yeah, that's, oh God.
Yes. And they go.
I don't know if I should watch that then.
They also talk about how the movie Psycho, the Alfred Hitchcock movie Psycho, was inspired by Ed Gein's story, because that plays a part in this miniseries. And looking at it's so gross, some of the stuff that they show, that I was like, oh, I did not need to see that. But it's actually done really well. Like, it is.
It's
a very,
like, comparable to the what's that one with the dude that ate people in Milwaukee?
Dahmer.
Dahmer. It was
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Because
I didn't
one
watch
was
that.
You never watched the docudrama thing?
No, I haven't watched it.
Oh fuck! Because I love docudramas. Like, one of my favorite shows of all time was the Waco docudrama.
Yeah.
Where, with the dude from
Taylor Kitsch.
With Taylor Kitsch. That Taylor is Kitsch. One of my favorite shows of all time.
It was good.
Like, it breaks down kind of like both sides of it. And like,
right.
I really like docudramas about that, because they, a lot of times they're done really well.
Yeah.
And they like kind of show all the fucked up shit that happened, but.
Well, they show some pretty fucked up shit. I haven't finished
it
yet.
I'm gonna have to check that out then, because I thought
it
was a documentary. That's kind of why I stayed away from it, but.
Oh my God, could you imagine a documentary? It's like 6 or 8 episodes or something. That would be obnoxious.
Oh,
and they would be interviewing the dog walker's grandma's coffee barista. But no, they don't have any interviews in this. It's just a drama based on his life. I'm sure that some of the stuff there might have been some, you know, dramatic license involved. I'm not sure. But there's some gory shit in there. And if you're got a weak stomach or you're faint of heart and don't want to know all the really gross stuff that Ed Gein did, then maybe don't watch it. But it's actually done. It's done well.
The people that listen to us want to see it, so that's a
valid point.
Chaser.
Valid point. Yeah.
What's your chaser? Not a happy go one, but so my
it's not,
chaser.
But I will say it's a good show.
My chaser is not a solid recommendation, but more of a general one. Any Palmer Luckey podcast.
Oh. Yeah.
P-A-L-M-E-R / L-U-C-K-E-Y. So he did Joe Rogan. He did Sean Ryan. They're all pretty much the same from what I've seen. But either one you can listen to. But he's a dude who, for people my age, especially dudes my age playing video games, he's making video games a reality, like for the military. So he's building these weird AI helmets that like work with drones in the space to show you basically wall hacks for people that play video games. It's wall hacks. And so it's really interesting to see, like, because people my age too were inundated with just videos of the Ukraine war. With every time I go on Instagram or something, I'm just getting people getting blown up by drones and stuff. Right. So it's cool to see like the future of AI and war and
for military purposes.
It's insane. Like,
did you? And it's very cool. So I watched the Rogan episode where he was talking about the helmet. Mm-hmm. Did you? You said he was on Sean Ryan as well.
Yeah.
Did he go into that a little bit more? Like, what? Because on Rogan, it was like 20 minutes, and that was about it that he talked about it. I mean, was it a little bit more in depth on Ryan?
No, it wasn't more in depth because he's kind of like, I think it's like a press run. Like, he's only allowed to talk about so much. And he said on the Rogan one, if you listen to the Rogan episode, it's like the last 30 minutes or something that he talks about AI helmet and company and stuff. But, just the last 30 minutes is the best part. You could just skip through it, but
he talks
about
that.
His company. Like, yeah, he's kind of annoying to listen to, but the company that he talks about and like the ability of his helmets and like, when you watch it on the video version is the coolest because people like they know what military helmets look like. And like when you picture a Marine, you can see they're wearing like a helmet and they have like this is like a weird future helmet. It's like, what's that movie where they fight the bugs?
Starship Troopers.
It's like a Starship Trooper helmet. Like,
yeah,
it's so futuristic and it connects with like drones and AI. And it's really interesting to be able to see like what the future of the military is.
Yeah,
that'd
be
like.
Cool. Yeah. That's a good recommendation.
All right. Well, I enjoyed hearing about your story, Mom. Thanks for listening, everybody. Go ahead and check us out on Instagram. Give us a rating on Apple. Give us a rating on Spotify. If you give us a rating on Apple, we'll read it, but we can't.
Yes.
I don't think we can
give us
read
a review.
Spotify
we haven't
ones,
had
right?
a review on Apple recently. So if anybody wants to go review us on Apple,
give you a shout out
and leave some nice words, we will shout you out and say thank you so much.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Hope you have a boozy, bizarre, and brutal week. Love you, Mom.
Yeah. Love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.